My call now is interim ministry. I just finished an interim term with a church in Macon, and I told them coming in the door, I am not a candidate for your permanent pastor. And I'll tell you that the same way. I'm an interim pastor. So transition is a time when we long for precision and clarity, and we hardly ever get it. It's about change. And as the great philosopher Yogi Berra has told us, change is usually different. We've all heard the old saw, the more things change, the more they stay the same. But if you've been around for any length of time at all and you've experienced very much change, I think what you've found is what I've found. The more things change, the more things change. And change, hopefully, is about growth. Growth is always about change. Change, we hope, is about growth. So I wanted to do this without a lot of precision. I hope some clarity for you, if not for me, to talk about change. And the book of Acts is one of the greatest places you can go to learn about change because the church was in her infancy. Now, in a lot of Bibles, it's titled The Acts of the Apostles. And that's true. There are a lot of things, a lot of stories in Acts about the apostles and the things they did and the way they did them. And they're wonderful. But Acts is also about a couple of other things. One, it's about the transition of leadership. How handy is that? The transition of leadership from Peter to Paul. And it's also about the church in her infancy. As the church started learning what it is to be the church and how the church is called to interact with the culture around. We said in seminary, if a church does not benefit the community where it lives, it really doesn't have much right to exist. And that's one of the things they were learning and that are preserved for us in the book of Acts. Really, I'm not going to talk much about the transition between Peter and Paul. And I'm not going to talk a lot about what the disciples did as they went through this time, but I do want to talk about how the church learned to be the church and how God was working to make things happen. Peter is speaking in our text. He's in Caesarea. He's around a guy named Cornelius. If you don't love your child, name them Cornelius. What a tough name to work. Hi, I'm Cornelius. He was an officer in the Italian cohort, which is the personal guards of Caesar. You had to be Italian to serve in that brigade. He's in the home of Cornelius and he says, "You know what I've discovered?" I love Peter. Peter is my excuse. He kind of bumbles through life sometimes, you know, and he makes a lot of mistakes and he stubs his toe on things and he says things he really shouldn't say. I love Peter. Now, tradition says he was a big guy, about my height, about my weight. But in terms of behavior, he was like Barney Fife in a robe and sandals. So here's Peter, and he's a lot different than he used to be. See, back in the gospel story, when he's learning about things, Peter makes a lot of promises he can't keep. He's very immature. And Peter says to Jesus one day, "Lord, I'll die for you." And Jesus says, "You know what? Before the rooster crows, you'll deny me three times." And sure enough, he did. Peter had a lot of learning to do. And we're joining this Acts story at a point where Peter's kind of catching on. He's kind of getting it finally through that thick head of his. Now, the story needs context. So let me back you up a little bit further back in the 10th chapter of Acts. Peter is at the home of Simon the tanner in the city or the village of Joppa. It's a seacoast town, and it's about lunchtime, and Peter's up on the roof, kind of having his time of devotion before lunch. And I don't know if it's the heat, I don't know if it's the spirit, don't know exactly how this happens, but Peter kind of falls into a trance. And he sees this sheet coming down from heaven. And on the sheet is things that you and I would consider wonderful for lunch. Shrimp, lobster, pork. Oh, I'm so glad we got pork. I love barbecue. Pork. Things that we think are wonderful. But Peter is a Jew. We need to not forget that these folks were Jews. Peter was a Jew. Paul was a Jew. Jesus was a Jew, an observant Jew. And Peter has been taught from the time he was a little boy that the things coming down on this sheet are nasty. You shouldn't eat them. Yeah. And they come down on this sheet, and the voice says, "Get up, Peter. Kill and eat. It's lunchtime." And Peter looks at this stuff, and he's like a toddler in the high chair being forced to eat strained carrots. That stuff is nasty. Mama told me that stuff was nasty. I shouldn't eat it. This happens three times. And the Spirit says to Peter, "What I have called clean, don't you dare call unclean." It'd be real easy, and I think Peter kind of got this impression at first, it'd be real easy to think that this lesson on the sheet is about food. Like I said, I'm so glad we got pork. But it's not about food. Peter has matured. Peter has started to learn, and it finally gets through his thick head that the lesson isn't about food, the lesson is about people. And when he gets it is where we join the story. Oh! God doesn't play favorites. That was kind of in the message he got. You know, we're the chosen people. The worldview at the time was there's us and there's them. And that's it. Sound familiar at all? There's us and there's them. And them is always the people you just don't really care for one reason or another. Maybe you're taught. I love Broadway. You have to be carefully taught. You guys know this. But it's wrong. There's not us and them, there's just us. That's it. And for Peter, this is a huge change. It's as much of a change as him learning to eat pork and lobster and shrimp and frog legs. It's a huge change for Peter. And he's here with this Gentile's Gentile, Cornelius, who was a member of the Roman guard, who himself has finally got it. It's gotten through to Cornelius. And he comes to faith. And Peter welcomes in, because he's finally getting it, Peter welcomes in all these Gentiles. Come on, you can be part of this. You see, the idea in the earliest part of the church was you had to be a Jew before you could be a Christian. And this is a leap for the church. the church has understood through Peter, no, you don't. We get in, us folks who were not born Jewish. We get in too. A little after this, the word gets back to the folks in Jerusalem who are part of a very conservative group. And they want Peter to explain himself. They call him on the carpet. What are you doing? Baptizing Gentiles. Don't you know they're supposed to be Jews first? And Peter retells the story of the sheet and Porky and Kermit and all the rest. And what's good for lunch. And he says, there's no difference. We're all the same. There's not us versus them. There's just us. And he says it. Did you read that part? Peter fairly exploded with good news. Don't you wish sometimes you had that kind of enthusiasm? It's great news. We've cured cancer. It's even better than that. God doesn't play favorites. I get in. Peter gets in. All of us who stub our toes and don't have clarity and don't have precision, we get in. It's not about how good we are. It's about how good God is. And as we go through change, like the early church went through change, understanding or trying to understand what it is to be the church and how to be the church and how to relate to our community and how to open our doors bigger and wider all the time, we can look back at these lessons from the early church. And if we're watching and if we're paying attention, when we stumble a bit, when we make a mistake, we'll understand, hey, it's all right. It's okay. God doesn't play favorites. Even us sinners get in. It's good news. It's the best news. Because you don't have to be anything. I love a book called The ABCs of Theology. In it, Gene Peterson says about salvation, there's nothing, in all caps, for you to do. There's nothing for you, all caps, to do. There's nothing for you to do, in all caps. You don't earn it. It's a gift. And it's available for everybody. Don't you just want to explode with that good news? I got in. And if I can do it, you can do it too. Because God doesn't play favorites. Yes. This church is a disciples church. What I know about disciples churches is this. We don't play favorites. So if you're Baptist, we'll forgive you. I'm a recovering Baptist, by the way. If you're Baptist, we'll forgive you. If you're Presbyterian, we'll forgive you. If you're Methodist, we'll forgive you. If you ain't nothing but available, we'll take you. We love people, period. I complained in the hallway, and I've complained about this for a long time. We're the best kept secret in Christendom. Do you know that? If people really knew who the disciples truly are, we'd have to beat them off at the door.